tax, highway improvements, how to shorten your commute. It's time to go live and in depth with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. Now live from the Glass and Close Nerve Center, here are your hosts, WTOP's Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Here is the phone number to call to get on Ask the Governor this morning. The number is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email a question at WTOP.com. We're also taking questions on our Facebook page or via Twitter. Use the hashtag AskTheGov. Here's Mark C. Graves.
Governor McDonnell, we appreciate you coming up from Richmond every month to talk to us. There is certainly a lot to talk about today, and why don't we start with transportation? Last month, you talked about rolling out your transportation plan. Now, just yesterday, the Democrats in Virginia have rolled out their plan. What do you think of their plan?
Well, I'd say, first of all, where have they been? And welcome to the fray. You know, we've talked about this for a long time. And, in all candor, I mean, Republicans and Democrats, Mark, want to address this problem this session. I've been very encouraged by the willingness to try to fix this problem that has lingered now for 20 years. And it affects quality of life, our ability to create jobs. I haven't really looked in detail. I just heard about it this morning.
I got 3 weeks. Right here. We can go through it.
Well, it's 3 weeks into the
point.
Session, and we're voting tomorrow. So, I mean, it's a little late to the party.
Part of the problem is that there is not much time left, is there?
No. Well, the vote in the House is tomorrow in the major committee, in the House Finance Committee, and then Thursday, I think, in the Senate Finance Committee. So it's late to be coming up with alternatives. I'd say the good news, I think they've got a significant tax increase in gas indexing and so forth. The problem is that the gas tax is in a long-term state of decline, Mark, and that's why I'm trying to address it by replacing it with a sales tax. Two independent polls came out last Thursday that said of all the different ideas that are out there, 2-1 Virginia's favor this approach going to the sales tax over the gas tax. But it's more. It's general fund. We've got a fee. We've got some federal revenues. Altogether, it's about $845 million, and it's going to be major new money for maintenance and construction. Up here, we get $300 million for rail to Dulles, improvements on 28, improvements on 66, on 234, paving and bridge projects throughout the region. I mean, this will really help Northern Virginia, and that's why we're asking people to help.
You talking about Northern Virginia, one of the proposals that the Democrats have is to give the authority to local jurisdictions like Northern Virginia to raise their own additional funds for their own transportation needs. Is that something that you could support?
Well, they have it now. They have the ability now to do a piggyback income tax of about, I think, about 0.5% that they have, and very few have availed themselves of that opportunity. I mean, I think these self-help measures are not a bad idea because they give local governments the ability to determine their own needs. My job, though, Mark, is to have a statewide solution as governor, and that's what I've proposed because it helps all regions of the state in accordance with the formula that we have.
Is this your legacy? The Post wrote the other day about that this is really a pivotal part of your last year as governor, as your legacy for the state is fixing a problem that has been ignored by many people over the years.
Well, you know, I honestly don't think in those terms. I let other people decide what it is. Like, we've done an incredible number of things working with Democrats and Republicans on creating surpluses. The unemployment rate is second lowest east of the Mississippi, major reforms in higher education, pension system, criminal justice. So we've got plenty of things. But I will say that the two big things I said for the General Assembly that I asked them to focus on this year that have not been accomplished well, that hurt our ability to create jobs and improve the quality of life, are creating a world-class education system in our K-12 system so that every young person is career or college ready. And secondly is to fix our transportation infrastructure. These have avoided us for a long time. So, yeah, it would be very important, not just for me, but for the future of Virginia to get these done.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell is here for the hour taking your calls on Ask the Governor.
Washington's most dependable source for news, traffic, and weather. 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. Ask the Governor with Bob McDonnell on WTOP. Now back to your host, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
The number to call if you have a question for Governor McDonnell this morning is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Email us at WTOP.com with your question, or you can send a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
And let's get right to the phones. John is calling from Richmond. John, you're on with Governor Bob McDonnell. Go ahead.
Hello, Governor. How are you?
John, good morning.
Good morning to you. I just was trying to figure out just reading the newspaper, where you actually stand with the, I think it was, what, 0.8% sales tax increase and dropping the gasoline tax. I guess the big question most people that I've talked to have is when you drop that tax, gasoline tax, and then, you know, enforce the 0.8% sales tax, that the gasoline, the prices of gasoline are going to still go right back to where they were, and then we're going to be hit with double tax, so to speak.
Yeah, John, that's a very good question. To explain the proposal, the problem is then every governor in every state deals with this around the country is the gasoline tax because of inflation, because of alternative fuel vehicles that don't use gasoline, and because of the increasing fuel efficiency because of the national CAFE standards. All of those have ebbed away at gasoline sales, a trend that will continue. In fact, it probably accelerate. And so doing something about that is a necessity if you're going to build roads. So what I've suggested is, let's just go to the sales tax. It grows, it's predictable, and convert it on a revenue-neutral basis. Kill the gas tax and go to 5.8 cents. Now, yesterday, a very good study came out by Chris Chimura, one of the most respected economists in Virginia, that looked at exactly this question. And her expert opinion was that she predicted that about 95% of the gas tax cut would be reflected in the gas price, meaning about to go about 16.6 cents average gas price reduction. That is a very good evidence of our theory that because of market forces, if you take the tax out of the equation, that the prices will fall. So we'd have some of the lowest gas prices on the East Coast. In fact, there's been a lot of articles in the Maryland papers recently about the concern about a lot of people coming to Virginia to buy gas, shop, and it would be a real boon for Virginia. So there's some other positive economic benefits of doing this approach.
But what about the idea that there have also been reports that say when you shift this tax burden to the sales tax, that it disproportionately impacts low-income families who will see a greater portion of their income go to sales tax, whereas higher-income families won't see as great a percentage go of their income go to the sales tax?
I don't believe that that's accurate. In fact, Ms. Chimura actually addressed that as well. The sales tax is not as regressive as the gas tax, especially people in rural areas, Mark, that have to drive long distances. They actually pay far more as a proportion in gas tax than they do in sales tax. The other thing about the sales tax is that we exempt food, we exempt medicine, we exempt other staples of life to try to make it less regressive. And so I don't think that argument holds up. We've been using the sales tax for transportation for 27 years. One half of a cent of the current 5 cent sales tax already goes to transportation. I'm simply suggesting we bump it up.
The Democrats, well, let me ask you a different question before I go to the Democrats. One of the other complaints about your proposal has come from environmental groups who say adding the $100 fee to hybrid vehicles and EV vehicles when you're getting rid of the gas tax is they look at it as punishment to people who are buying hybrid vehicles.
Yeah, and that's I understand that, but it's not accurate. And here's why. It's meant to compensate for the federal gas tax that those vehicles do not pay. Two-thirds or so of all the funding for our transportation system, Mark, comes from the state sales gas tax and the federal gas tax. Now, it's true, we'd be eliminating the state gas tax, but the federal gas tax, 18.5 cents. If you're an electric vehicle or a hybrid, you either pay no tax or you pay very little tax. So it's simply an equity issue as these alternative fuel vehicles continue to grow. And look, I'm all for them. I'm converting the state fleet to natural gas. I mean, I'm all for that. It's a cheaper fuel. It helps the environment. But you got to have the reality, realize that these don't pay for roads because they don't pay gas tax. So it's simply an equity issue.
Let me back to what some of the Democrats have an issue with, and that is diverting more funds from the general fund to transportation. And in their proposal, they that's one of the line items that they cite that
right.
They don't want to do it. How do you address that?
Well, it's just totally inaccurate to say that we cannot use a small amount of the state general fund for a core priority of government like transportation. Mark, what I'm proposing is that we shift about $50 million a year for 5 years over to transportation. Now, let me tell us in the perspective for the reader, for your listeners. We had $450 million in surpluses the last 3 years on average. Our general fund is growing at nearly $1 billion a year because we're growing at 4 or 5%. So you cannot say with a straight face that we can't use a little bit of the general fund for transportation. We've done it four or five times. Many of these same Democrats have voted for it. So they're just being disingenuous. It just means we got to cut and be a little more frugal in some other areas in order to fund transportation. It can be done. And the other thing, Mark, it won't pass the House of Delegates without some general fund.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell is here for the rest of the hour, taking your calls, emails, Facebook questions on Ask the Governor.
Decisions. You're listening to Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. Now back to WTOP's Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
More of your phone calls coming for Governor McDonnell at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email questions as well at WTOP.com. Send us a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
Governor, you have said, and let's just close the loop on the transportation bill, you have said that you were open to some kind of compromise in order to get this done. Where are you willing to compromise? Can you point to some specific part of your plan or the Democrats' plan where you think there's some common ground?
Mark, what I think is important is that we fix the problem this year. You know, we got 60 groups supporting us, labor unions, business groups, a lot of different people. I think the polls show that people favor our approach. It's going to do a massive amount of good. So I want to get the result. I'm not interested in saying we tried. I want to get it fixed this year. It's my last year to try to do that. It's $845 million. So if we have some other ideas that get us to about that amount of money that maybe can figure the tax structure, the fee structure differently, or I'm all for some options here. What we cannot have is $700-800 million gas tax.
So the increase on wholesale gas that the Democrats propose, you're opposed to that.
Well, because the people aren't behind it, and we cannot raise taxes in this fragile economy by that whopping amount. I've tried to use user fees and revenue-neutral conversions that grow in the future and things that make good economic sense. But just straight out tax increases are not
going to
pass.
Can you point to one specific item where I have some wiggle room here?
Well, both the fees, the general fund, the tax policies, I mean, all of those are negotiable within the realm of an $850 million or so plan that doesn't have whopping taxes increases in it. There's ways to do that a little bit differently, and if Democrats or Republicans have other ideas, we can do it. But I'm insistent that we fix the problem and that we address particularly the major congestion issues here in Northern Virginia.
Let's get back to the phones. And Tricia is calling from Vienna. Tricia, you're on with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell.
Good morning, sir.
Hi, Tricia.
Hi. I'd like to say that I think you are one of the best governors that Virginia has ever had.
Oh,
congratulations.
Thank you.
You will be missed. My question.
Not going anywhere for a while.
I'd also like to congratulate you on your work with convicted felons getting their privileges back as far as voting. The guns I'm really not too crazy about, but anyway, rights are rights. I am a 53-year-old single mom. I have one son in college. I am a convicted felon. And what do I need to do to get my voting rights back?
Well, Tricia, under the current law, the only remedy, of course, is to apply for a petition for civil rights restoration to the governor. And we have completely retooled those. We're granting those in 30 to 60 days, unlike a year plus for previous governors. We've done more than any governor in history now, about 4,500. I believe in second chances. I believe in rehabilitation. I believe in restoration. I believe it helps smart government. Get people back. Give them a chance to be good, productive citizens. I admire you for having a son in college and turning your life around. I'm supporting a constitutional amendment for automatic restoration. We had a historic vote yesterday for the first time ever that passed the Senate with a 30-10 vote. We got a battle in the House, and we'll keep working on it. But I think it's the right thing to do. So for now, get your petition into the Secretary of the Commonwealth. I'll look at that. I'm granting a very high percentage, over 90% of those. And I admire you for doing everything to be a productive citizen.
Governor, you say that the Senate passed it yesterday, and that was historic. But the House is where it has had problems in the past.
Yes.
There's still a long road to go before you can claim victory here. How do you see it happening in the House?
Well, we already had the initial House bill that I endorsed of a Republican legislator, Delegate Habib. And unfortunately, it was killed on about a 6-1 vote in a subcommittee. And so, I've got work to do. There's been a lot of bills and a lot of reforms that I've pursued over here that have taken 5, 10, 15 years or more to get get through, Mark, and so you got to be vigilant and patient. At some point, this will happen. There's only two states that don't have some form of automatic restoration. It's the right thing to do. This is a constitutional right, the right to vote, and we should not disenfranchise people and having it not be left to the whim of a governor, but be a uniform way of giving people the rights back is the right approach. I'll continue to pursue that, and hopefully we get it done.
Let's get back to the phones. Frank is calling from Falls Church. Frank, you're on with the governor.
Oh, thank you, Governor. First, I want to echo Tricia and thank you for your commitment to restoring rights in Virginia.
Sure.
But I'm calling today about HB 259, the redistricting bill, forced
yes.
through the Senate last week.
Uh-huh.
I want to urge you to veto it if it gets to your desk. As you know, this is a major unprecedented move that might be unconstitutional. I think it sets a very bad precedent for state legislatures to make major changes to their districts anytime they feel like it rather than once every 10 years. So will you commit today to veto that bill?
Well, first, thanks for calling and your initial nice comments. Here's what I would say. First of all, it's not unprecedented. Unfortunately, throughout the annals of the General Assembly, both political parties have used statistical numerical advantages to their benefit to be able to push for any number of policy changes. Now, the way that this redistricting bill was enacted last week, I was very critical of. I was surprised, and I said that is not the way we do business in Richmond. So, listen, this thing's got several hurdles. It still hasn't cleared the House of Delegates. It has been passed by for well over a week there. I'm not sure what's going to happen in the House, and I'll have to make a tough decision when I when and if I get that bill. So I don't, but I don't look at bills generally on process. I look at them on substance and legality and constitutionality, and that's the decision that I'll have to make if and when I get the bill. But I have not done that analysis on the constitutional questions. I've begun to ask the Attorney General some questions about the bill itself on the merits. But I agree that it is not the way to do business.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell will follow up with this right after a look at what's going on the road.
Ask the Governor with Bob McDonnell on WTOP. Now back to your host, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Your chance to talk to the governor is now at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can email questions by going to our website, WTOP.com. Send us a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov. Mark?
Governor, let's close the loop on this redistricting thing. I have two questions about this. And one to the caller's question. It sounds like when you say you're not going to make your decision based on the process, which you've acknowledged was flawed or that you didn't like, it sounds like you're willing to sign on to this proposal.
No, I just said I haven't evaluated yet. There may be constitutional and legal issues that will arise. Those are generally opinions that I get from the Attorney General. But for a governor to look behind the process of how the sausage is made, there's a lot of things that happen in the General Assembly, Mark, with process that I can't look behind and I don't necessarily like. But
do you think
very
they exceeded their authority in the fact that the technicality that they used, the amendment needed to be germane? And this is a decision that
that's
Speaker Howell will have to make.
That's correct.
Have you talked to him about this? I mean, what are you guys talking about? It seems to us from the outside that you want him to kill it and he wants you to kill it.
Well, you shouldn't believe everything that you read. There's all kinds of drama that just simply the people report on simply inaccurate. This is solely within the province of the Speaker. I've talked to the Speaker a few times about my own bills in the past. The Speaker does what he thinks is right. On germaneness, he's a very, very much a protector of the authority of the chair and making sure that the process is orderly. And Bill Howell's a friend. He's a man of great principle. And I think he's going to do what he thinks is right.
Have you talked to him about
right.
this issue?
Well, I've talked about the overall question of when are they going to act and if I'm going to get the bill and so forth. It's been gone by for a week. But on the issues of germaneness, this is a call for him. And I haven't been successful one way or the other in the past talking to him about germaneness. He's his own man, and he's going to do what he thinks is right.
Are you concerned that the Democrats will be so upset about this
sure.
redistricting that it's going to impact
absolutely.
Gridlock on
yep.
transportation or anything else?
Absolutely.
And so what's your message to the Republican Party that has put you in this situation?
Well, you know, last year we had a flare-up over committee assignments, over the budget. What I'm concerned about, Mark, is I came in with a mission this session to do three things. One is to get a structurally balanced budget that serves our people well. Secondly, just to make sure that we get K-12 reform, dramatic reform, to make sure all our kids are career or college ready. And third is to fix our infrastructure. I'm tired of excuses and delay. And anything that gets us off of that is unacceptable. And I think most people understand these are priorities. So dealing with redistricting or power struggles or committee assignments or parliamentary maneuvers that get one side or the other ginned up to take them off of this focus is very troubling to me. So I've got it just creates more challenges to get the good things done for the people.
Bobby Jindal, who is replacing you as chair of the Republican Governors Association,
has replaced you. November.
Had some critical remarks of the National Republican Party, saying that a number of Republicans have damaged the brand by making offensive and bizarre comments, and he said the party can no longer be a stupid party. What do you think about those comments? Because it seems to, on a national level, this is actually playing out on a state level in Virginia with the Virginia Republican Party.
Bobby Jindal is an incredibly good governor. In fact, some of our education initiatives that we're pursuing in the General Assembly result from a trip to New Orleans that Democrats and Republicans took at my request earlier this year. He's a tremendous thought leader in our education reform. You know, there are people in both parties that say stupid things. We just make a few more of those, it seems like, on very important issues where we don't describe the conservative message right, and it turns people off. Listen, I've said it this way. I think we have good, solid principles that date back to the foundations of the country, but our politics is off. We're not doing a very good job explaining in a thoughtful way all year round. As a community organizer, we need to be better community organizers to explain to people why conservatism works and liberalism fails. Whether it's debt or deficits or roads or schools or education, the things that conservatives, particularly Republican governors, the 30 of them have put in place, they actually work. They're getting results. People want government to work. They're tired of rhetoric. They're tired of delay. They're tired of obfuscation and finger pointing and all the stuff that we've got going on in Washington. It's why the approval ratings up here are so low, Mark. And so I think results-oriented conservatism is what we need to talk about. And spokespeople from our party that say things that are not thoughtful and hurt our brand on either social or fiscal issues are not helpful. And we have got to change our tone as well as we've got to show up and demonstrate to people that we care and our solutions work.
Let me ask you about Ken Cuccinelli, Attorney General for Virginia. A couple of questions about him. He came out in the Washington Post today in support of a bill that would have eased the requirements for women seeking abortion to have an ultrasound. The bill would have made it optional. He has been a staunch advocate on this issue, but came out in favor of making that optional. What do you think about Attorney General Cuccinelli's stance on this? Were you surprised?
Well, no, I think he said the same thing last year, and he was looking at it from a legal perspective that approach would have made it perhaps easier to defend in court. I think that's what I understood him to say. You know, Mark, we had that discussion last year. There were some bills in this year that were defeated. So those decisions have been made for this session. That's why I'm hoping we can focus not on social issues like the Democrats seem to want to do this session, but to focus on schools and roads and budgeting. That's what people care about.
Would
That's
you have
what
been
they
open
said we
to,
needed to do.
If it had passed, it made it to your desk to make that optional, would you have vetoed that?
Well, that was the bill that I had pursued years ago, is to have it to be have the bill actually introduced that way. But in practice, it made, honestly, Mark, and this has been lost in the discussion, made little difference because in practice for many, many years, ultrasounds were already given as a matter of course in these
procedures. They
weren't
required by the state.
No, but they were required by the standards of medical practice, is my point.
Let's take a break, and we'll let you finish your thought right after.
This is your instant source for news, traffic, and weather. 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio. You're listening to Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. Now back to WTOP's Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Get your question ready for the governor and call us at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Phone lines are jammed, so please be patient right now. You can also send us a tweet. Use the hashtag AskTheGov.
Governor, let's go through a lightning round of some topics that have been in the
it's
news.
Very nostalgic. This is our last 20 minutes together, Mark. I mean, this is rather
tearful.
We'll
get to that.
Okay.
Governor, the Attorney General, speaking of Ken Cuccinelli, is running for governor.
Yes,
about
I heard that.
This time when you were Attorney General, I think about February.
20th.
February 20th, you resigned as Attorney General.
I did.
To devote your attention full-time to running
yes.
for governor. Why did you do that?
Well, I thought that was the right thing for my campaign. More importantly, I thought it was the right thing for the office at the time. But every Attorney General's got to make their decision. The last 40 years, most of them have done it. The previous 100, they didn't do it. So it's gone both ways. If the Attorney General thinks he can do both jobs, more power to him.
What do you
him.
Think? And the Attorney General, I mean, running for governor is an expensive full-time proposition.
Yes,
you know that.
It is.
Being Attorney General is a very
yes.
important full-time job. Can anybody possibly do both of those jobs in this political climate that we live in? I mean, 100 years ago, things were a lot different. In the political climate that we're in today, can somebody legitimately do both at once?
Sure. Is it easy to do? No. Can it be done? Yes. I didn't think it was the right decision for me. But, I mean, look, the President of the United States just ran for re-election campaigning full-time. So I would say there's Exhibit 1 about how these things can be done. I just didn't think it was the best for me, my campaign in the state in 2009.
Chuck Schumer, John McCain,
yes.
the odd couple. They're
Why
being,
do you need a gang
called.
To get anything done in Washington, Mark? We're against gangs
gang
in Virginia.
Gang of Eight, we like to name things. Okay. But they've come out with a proposal on immigration, a pathway to citizenship
yes.
that is tied to immigration border security.
Yes.
President of the United States will speak later today. He
yes.
will give his proposal, which is, from what we understand, going to be an easier, more streamlined path to to citizenship. What are your thoughts? There have been some Virginia politicians who don't like the proposal put out by McCain and Schumer.
Well, I applaud them for getting together and trying to get something done on this thorny issue. The president's done nothing but talk for 4 years about getting this done and has offered nothing to move the ball down the road. There are three components of a comprehensive immigration reform. One is border security. Secondly, is enforcement within the United States. And thirdly, is the toughest one, and that is what do you do with the 12 million people that are reportedly here illegally. And that's what they've grappled with. It seems to me to be a pretty tough love approach. You go to the back of the line, you pay a fine, you have to learn English, you have to learn civics, you have to do a number of other things. It deals with the reality that we're not going to deport 12 million people. And so I think it's a realistic approach. I haven't looked at all the details, but I applaud them for trying to deal with this. And look, as I've told you many times, Mark, my grandfather came here 100 years ago from Ireland. Legally, but he worked his way up. Immigration is critically important. They also put a focus in this bill, I understand, on agriculture and specific economic needs of America to make it easier for people like that to be able to come here. But
should that be expanded if there are other industries that say, hey, look, we depend on these workers, we should have some kind of a exemption here as well?
They ought to look at it, but do it legally. I mean, that's the whole key is if we have problems in agriculture, we have challenges, we need PhDs in nuclear science, absolutely. Let's have a faster pathway. Expanding the guest worker permit would be a great start. We got 67,000 of those, and that's unrealistic. In some years, that's gone in a week.
Let me ask you about gun laws. There's a lot
yes.
of talk since the Connecticut massacre about reforming gun laws, and one of them is the gun show loophole, which allows
yes.
private sales between private individuals
right.
to go without a background check. Would you be open to requiring background checks even on private sales between individuals, not necessarily licensed firearm dealers?
Probably not, Mark. The regulation of private sales, I don't think, needs to be done. We've got any number of other felony laws with straw purchases and anything, all kinds of things that prohibit you from selling to people that are disqualified from purchasing a firearm. When we created the background check system, and Virginia has about the best in the country, and we developed it over 20 years ago.
But if there's a segment of the population that isn't using that background check, isn't that a loophole? I mean, isn't that...
Well, but there's not been any evidence, Mark. I want to do something...
So you're waiting for a massacre to happen from a gun sold from person to person?
No, but you're missing the point. I want to do something that works, not just to make people feel good. Whether you look at the Virginia Tech tragedy in Virginia or Newtown, Connecticut, none of those things were related to people buying anything at a gun show. I'm focusing on what works. And to me, it's school safety, it's school resource officers, it's mental health, it's better reporting to our databases. I mean, these are the things that can actually make a difference. And so I think that's where our focus ought to be.
Let me ask you about a bill that's going through about fining adults who are in cars and smoking with young children
yes.
in the car. Is this something you support?
I'll take a good look at it. I think it's a little bit of the nanny state, but I do understand there are dangers of secondhand smoke. It's not, honestly, I saw it in the headlines in the paper this morning. I haven't looked at the bill. reasonable restrictions like in daycare centers I've supported in the past. I haven't looked at this bill here, and I'll consider it when I get it.
Another bill, cohabitation.
Yes.
How are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a criminal law. That's what's sought to be repealed. I do think that people have different views on that issue as a matter of faith and morals. But I think it's an antiquated law. I think it's antiquated law, and we shouldn't subject it to criminal penalties. That's what the delegate or the senator is trying to repeal, and that probably makes sense.
Virginia.
Ask the Governor with Bob McDonald on WTOP. Now back to your host, Mark C. Graves and Mark Lewis.
Final moments on the air with Virginia Governor Bob McDonald and Mark C. Graves, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You can send a tweet using the hashtag AskTheGov. Mark?
Governor, a couple of quick questions. The FBI
Wait,
moving...
this is my time.
It will be your time in just a second.
Okay.
FBI moving out of Washington, D.C. It seems like Maryland, Virginia, everybody wants the FBI headquarters in their jurisdiction. Are you working on that to try to lure the FBI headquarters to Virginia?
We'd love to have them there. It's a natural fit. You know, they already got a lot of operations in Quantico and other places. We'd love to have them.
And then let me ask you, are you now ready to admit that the most overrated team in college football was Notre Dame? I mean, come on, talk about your blowouts.
For 3 hours in January, yes. But the rest of the season, no. Great defense. They'll be back. The echoes have been woken up.
And let me ask you, in all seriousness, the controversy.
Are you filibustering?
The controversy surrounding
I got some tough questions for you.
Manti Te'o.
Yes.
I mean, this has made a lot of headlines. What is your take on this?
You know, I don't know. Gosh, there's so many different stories. All I know is everything I've read about Manti is he's a world-class kid. He's a young kid with a lot of faith, got a lot of heart. I mean, he did lose his grandmother the day before. How this other thing came to be, I really don't know. I've read conflicting facts, but all I can say, he's been a great leader for Notre Dame, and he led them from unranked to number one. It's a great story, and so while this is a subject of a lot of drama and controversy, I think it doesn't diminish his accomplishments at Notre Dame.
You know, Governor, you've been kind enough for the past 3-plus years to drive up here from Richmond or fly up. I don't know how you transport up here every month, but we appreciate you coming and taking
these
questions. I know sometimes they're not that comfortable, as you've alluded to. Today is my last day at WTOP and my last show with you. And, of course, people like Mark Lewis, who here has shared the board with me, has been invaluable. And your staff, these shows don't come together without the staff of the governors, the mayors, the chiefs of police, putting these scheduling things together. But in all fairness, in the last minute or so here that we have in the show, I've been asking you
questions for four years.
You can ask a couple questions.
Oh, hey, listen, I've really enjoyed being on. It's a great opportunity to talk to your listeners in Northern Virginia, and as governor, it's a real honor. All right, so Notre Dame coming to the ACC and Maryland going to the Big Ten. What do you think about that?
As someone who went to University of Maryland, has Maryland season tickets, I'm not thrilled about Maryland going to the ACC. But I did watch the Indiana-Michigan State game the other day. And
they can play basketball.
They got some good basketball, and we're looking forward to beating Duke one more time this year.
But would you admit it's a step up for the ACC getting Notre Dame and losing Maryland?
It's a step up for the Big Ten getting Maryland, I can tell you that.
All right, now, listen, speaking of Virginia versus Maryland, with all those high taxes in Maryland, those regulations and all these other things that the governor's doing over there, isn't it time for you to move to Virginia?
I live in the District of Columbia. I've lived here for many, many years, raising my family and children here.
Well, Mayor Gray would agree. His taxes are just as bad. I mean, shouldn't you move to Virginia now?
We really, really do love Washington, D.C. As you know, we were married in Virginia, and we spent a lot of time vacationing in Virginia. You get plenty of tax dollars.
I've interviewed your wife, and she's actually suggested the move. Are you ready to make a commit today here on radio that you will make the move?
I know that she's not ready to make that move.
Okay, well, now on handguns, I wanted to ask you about that. I know you're a big gun enthusiast, registered your gun in D.C. What do you make of the story here recently that in Virginia, gun sales are up dramatically, but yet crime is down? Doesn't that sort of debunk some of these liberal theories, Mark?
I registered a gun in the District of Columbia when handguns first became legal as a part of a story to explore the cumbersome process to register a gun. I then donated that gun to the NRA Museum where it resides today.
I'd like to know, what is your favorite Ask the Governor moment that you and I have shared during these last 3 years? I know there's so many. It's hard. It's a hard question. But
you were very good to me on transvaginal ultrasounds.
All right, next question. Mark, how do you decide what caller to actually pull up? Because I know a lot of them you just kind of don't like. So
any of the calls that we see that originate from Richmond or the State House or any of Tucker Martin's
those are my
families,
relatives.
Those
yes.
relatives, we know to avoid those calls.
All right, let me ask you two last serious questions about the media. Is the media fair and balanced, or is it decidedly biased?
I believe on the majority of reporters are fair and balanced, particularly here at WTOP.
But everybody comes into a job with their bias, even me.
No, I think as trained professionals, this is a good question, because I think as trained professionals, we are trained and reminded every day that we put those feelings aside. And we go and we cover stories impartially, without emotion, and without our bias. Because, yes, we're all humans and we all have our feelings, but as professionals, we're trained and we're held accountable to put those feelings aside.
All right. Well, how do you explain the nightly news on MSNBC or Fox, the clearly a decided viewpoint?
And clearly, you hear nothing but fair and unbiased coverage here on WTOP. I really don't watch a lot of the other network news.
But you'll be watching them now at NBC, won't you?
Because I am so busy covering you from day to day.
Beautiful. Do you think their media has a role in promoting civility? Or is the role really just to, because of your concern about ratings, advertising? Let's face it, you focus on drama, you focus on conflict, things people want to read about, they want to watch, they want to listen to. Does the media have any role in a very polarized society in promoting this concept of civility, or do they have none?
The media certainly has several responsibilities, and I think they live up to those most of the time.
Okay, how would you defend that statement?
Because I would look at the body of work that I can only speak for one reporter. And my body of work, I believe, has been fair, has been balanced. And you can be as good a judge as anyone because you've sat across the microphone for me for 3.5 years.
Well, as a political reporter and you focused on what's going on in Washington, let's face it, we're pretty divided. The House, Senate, very much miles apart. I think the president, my view, has actually promoted a lot of that dysfunction and lack of civility with some of his pretty partisan comments.
But you
comments.
Don't think that
I'm asking the question.
You don't think that politicians like yourself then make things worse by perpetuating that argument?
Sure we do. But what would you say, having talked to a lot of politicians?
Whose responsibility is it to why don't you be the one who steps up and just say, yeah, from now on, no more partisan politics?
I preach civility all the time, but you all love it because
Governor Bob McDonnell, we appreciate you coming in here every single
great
month.
Great filibuster, Mark.
Taking these great questions from us.
I've enjoyed it.
And we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Best wishes at NBC4.
And the governor will continue to join us for Ask the Governor here on WTOP. Thank you, Governor. Mark, best wishes to you.